I'm Jeff Newkirk, the host of Game Changers. I talk to people who have done something to make this world a better place. People who are working to make a significant and profound change. So it's simple. Inspire and educate and let's go change this world. Welcome to the show. Hey, welcome to the podcast, Game Changers. Man, I have a huge treat today. I've been waiting for this guest for a long time, Mr. Tim Jensen from Grunt Style. But before I get into that, I want to thank my awesome sponsor, Magic Mind. So Magic Mind is like this productivity shot. You take it every morning with your coffee and it gives you energy and focus throughout the day. It's full of all these great antioxidants and vitamins. It can be found at magicmind.com. And a big thanks to Magic Mind for sponsoring Game Changers with Jeff Newkirk. All right, Mr. Tim Jensen, Grunt Style. Now, Tim is a Marine Corps veteran, leader in business and advocacy for the veteran community. Born in Chicago, Illinois, Tim currently serves as the chief brand officer for Grunt Style, and you're located in San Antonio, correct, Tim?
That's correct, Jeff.
And Grunt Style is one of the fastest growing e-commerce and retail patriotic brands in the country. I have been a fan for a long time. You're also chairman of the Grunt Style Foundation, and you host several popular veteran-focused podcasts. During your service in the Marine Corps, you served as an AMTRACer, gone infantryman, and was deployed to Iraq in September of 2004. Now, can you help us understand a little bit better, what is AMTRACer, gone infantryman?
Most people in the Marine Corps, you know, would do it the opposite direction, being an infantryman and then wanting to get out of the infantry to something of less that would be in the infantry and go into any other MOS, right? I went from Amtraks, was my original MOS in Marine Corps. And those are the big troop carrying machines that drive off the back of a ship, you know, deliver Marines to the shoreline. And I didn't like that job. But, you know, no. It was fun, but you spend more time busting rust. For every hour of operation, it's like 8 hours of maintenance. So it's spent more time on machines than anything else. And when I left active duty and got back into the reserve side, that's when I had the opportunity to change my MOS to an infantryman due to the MTO requirements needed by the reserve battalion that was heading to Iraq. And I wanted to be on that deployment. So had the opportunity to get an OJT on the job training and some very brief infantry schoolhouse stuff, and did that in my time before I deployed to Iraq in 2003. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for your service. And you participated in over 200 combat patrols in extremely violent Northern Babil province. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, the Northern Babil province of Iraq.
And you were awarded Combat Action Ribbon and a second award for Navy Achievement Medal with a Combat Valor device. What does that mean?
In the Marine Corps, it's very hard to get devices or even awards, right? The Marine Corps is very scrutinous in its ways of looking at heroism or things to award ribbons, medals, and devices for. I earned that Navy Achievement Medal second award with a Combat Valor device for my actions in Iraq against the enemy. We had some significant combat interactions that we had. Also found a significant amount of IEDs before they blew us up.
Oh my gosh.
That was something else that I was very proud about. But it goes to show you the danger of that time period.
I can't imagine being in that situation. Yeah. And I mean, you must have just been on
people, like, walking down the side of a road, right? You got these Humvees, because I was part of a combined anti-armor team that we made this new concept called a mobile strike team. We rode around in vehicles in Iraq. That was our job. But there were these times that we'd have to get out and do road patrols, like marching on the road on the shoulder looking for IEDs. And you're just scanning the ground, scanning around, looking for red det cord. And imagine like kicking over a tail fin of like an aircraft bomb. You know, that happened to me a couple times. That'll really get your heart rate going, make you feel small in a matter of seconds.
People here, I mean, in our country, civilians have no clue, really. I think I shouldn't say everybody, but many do not really understand all that you all went through. And Veterans Day, we just had Veterans Day on Saturday. I hope you did something to relax and enjoy that day. But I think we do not do enough for our veterans and military personnel. I just don't think we do. What you've gone through is just unbelievable.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And I think we're coming off of the Veteran Day weekend, as you mentioned, November 10th, a dear day for myself as the 248th Marine Corps birthday was just celebrated as well. And I believe that it takes us a very unique individual. Less than 1% of the total population will raise their hand to go serve their country. But it takes an individual, a certain individual, to stand up and do that, right? And this selfless, caring individual like that. And there are people that join the military just because there's nothing else, right? But, you know, less than 1% of the population that go and do this. And they go and find themselves off in strange places doing strange things. And most of the time, if not all the time, it's to keep the violence that is outside the borders of the United States at arm's length, right?
And outside.
There's a level of violence that the United States is insulated from that is happening around the world. And it takes great, brave men and women of the United States to wear that uniform and go off abroad for whatever the job may be and forever how long that job may be. They will are committed to go out and doing that. And I think that's something that we should be, again, in a country that operates off of a volunteer force, we need to be celebrating this, because if you look around,
absolutely,
it's getting more violent. Recruiting is getting harder here in the United States. And how long can we keep the enemies at bay? I don't know.
We could talk about that for a long time, because we got all kinds of things happening right now in our world and in our country. And we're both in Texas and we see what's happening close to us. And that's a big fear, fear. So, but again, thank you for everything you've done. And I hope you did something to enjoy Veterans Day weekend. So, and you now are a co-owner of Gruntstyle and chief brand officer. So tell us, what is Chief? Told you this before. I've been a big fan of Gruntstyle for a long time. I don't know how much Gruntstyle stuff I have. I so admire what you do and appreciate what you do. But tell us, what is Chief Brand Officer?
And I'll tell you, Jeff, never is not enough, right? You can always have more Gruntstyle in your life. But
okay, yeah.
As a Chief Brand Officer,
I agree.
My role and responsibility essentially is to continue to put the brand in a position of growth, right? I work with the CEO to align the vision of where we need to be putting the brand, to grow the brand, to continually evolve the brand, make sure it's showing up in the right way, that the marketing is crisp, clean, and very concise for our consumers, that the products that we're putting forward meet the highest expectation of the brand. I spent a lot of my time on the creative side of the house. Over the years, that has not been such the case. I started out in the business folding t-shirts, of all things. And from there, went on to be a press operator, the lead press operator, production manager, operations manager, chief operating officer, partner, president, strategy officer. Now I'm the brand officer, right? And I've worn pretty much every hat in the business. But as of lately, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, I've been really playing around on the creative side. And it's been a lot of fun in exercising creativity within myself and, and bringing the right team together that can execute on these visions of what we think the brand can be and how it should be showing up and how do we communicate our message to everybody out there that loves the brand. And even for those people that don't like the brand, how do we talk to them in a way that makes sense, right? Because one of the things that I'm very...
Like the brand.
Who
would not like the brand?
There's a lot of people out there that don't like the brand, and I get and I can understand that, right? The brand's not for everybody, and at the end of the day, Gruntstyle is not for everybody. But the one thing that we are for everybody is this idea of patriotism. And over the years, it's become quite a nationalistic word because of the populism and just natural politics within our country. Patriotism has become a third rail, right? And I never thought country would actually, we find ourselves in this place. But that's where I think Gruntstyle has this unique capability, right? Through our foundation, through the work that we do with the brand, we're a political company. We don't take any sort of political side. What we understand is that the Constitution of the United States is something that needs to be celebrated, that we need to know it. We need to be able to understand it. We should be able to defend it. And we should be able to pass that on to the next generation of people behind us. We also believe that Gruntstyle should be the leader in instilling pride in military, pride in country. Again, going back to this idea of patriotism, if you remove all the politics of the word patriotism away, right, everybody has a sense of love for their country. And it might be different from the way that we all see it in personally, right? But that's what makes this country so beautiful, is that we can see past the things that we disagree on. And as we understand that this country is important and it deserves our ability and our stewardship to pass it on to the next generation behind us, I think that's important. And that's where our brand shines through. And we think that we can be a bridge and we can bring some of the partisanship that is being exhibited within our country today into a different conversation.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with everything except for why anybody would not like Grunt Style, totally endorse and support Grunt Style. To me, it's just, I think just common sense and the right thing to do.
We do embody and embrace a level of violence, right? Yeah, we have a lot of things like the Violent But True Bedtime Stories, the Minute of Violence on our social media channels. We talk about a lot of these different things, but this is the warrior culture. It's in the
real
grunt style, right? With this grunt style.
I mean, it can't run away from that. It's right. Part of reality.
We are looking at the world through the prism of a grunt, right? But at the same time, that grunt is representative of the fabric of our country. And so again, like, we celebrate the warrior ethos, and that could be less popular for some people that don't see eye to eye on some of those things. But again, what I find to be the beauty of this country is that there are people like myself and many, many others, my children, I have my son that's in the Navy now on the USS Nimitz, that there are women that are willing to continue.
Thank him for his service.
Yeah, thank you. To put the uniform on and continue to live a life of selfless service for people they've never met before.
Which is amazing. So growing up in Chicago, into the military, Marines, the Corps, then Grunt Style. How did you get to Grunt Style from the military? Oh,
it's a long road. A lot of things in between that time period, right? But I'll kind of walk it out as from 2005.
I know you got a great story. I've heard you speak before. It's an awesome story.
It's a good one, right? And I think it's relatable for a lot of people that may be listening. 2005, after I left my last series of time in the Marine Corps, went back to Chicago, had a one-year-old son and my wife at the time living there, and I came back, and it was a difficult time for me. I struggled with a lot of things of getting myself back to the civilian mindset, a provider and responsible for my family. It was difficult because they were already in a pattern of routine for the last year that I wasn't around for, and I felt like an outsider. And those were all things that I was manifesting on myself, right? Those weren't real. Those weren't things that are actually happening. And, you know, my life spun out of control, got into alcohol and drugs and a bunch of different things that I'm not very proud about. Ended a marriage, and I struggled for a long period of time trying to figure out what it is I wanted to do. I mean, I was making good money. I was a union carpenter in the city of Chicago, but it was also aiding my behaviors, right? I was being a union carpenter in the city of Chicago. You get off at 2 o'clock. Where do you find yourself? You find yourself at the bar till
bar, you know,
six, right. 7, 8 o'clock at night, every day of the week, right? And that was not helping my lifestyle. So I knew I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. My life is kind of all over the place. So I hit the pause button. I was like, okay, it's time to do something radically different. And I quit my job and I went to college using the post 9/11 GI Bill. And got
good for you.
A three-year degree, bachelor's degree, graduated top of my class, cum laude.
Awesome. And congrats.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And during that time period, you know, I was exploring a lot of different things. I was doing comic books, started a business with one of my college associates, had an art studio, and a lot of different things, but none of it was making money.
But you were always creative.
Yeah, my entire life had been creative. So I graduate, got these comic books. I published 7 comic books. I've been at C2E2, like the comic convention in Chicago, Wizard World Chicago. I was doing that. Got a great writer that I was working with. His name, Ivan James, an incredible dude in the city of Chicago. But again, like, that was not making money. And my wife was like, I met a new gal that she saved my life. And that was a great period in my life. But she really brought me back down to earth, started bringing back my priorities and things, and helped me refocus a lot. It didn't allow me to chase things that were unattainable. She allowed me to pursue the things I loved, right? And that was all these comic stuff, but, you know, they weren't going anywhere. So she's like, all right, Tim, it's time we have to do something different. So I went around looking for jobs, 2012, 2013. There wasn't really anything in the marketplace at that time. I tried for a couple video game companies. That was what my degree was in, is game theory and design. And found out real quick that I wasn't as good as I thought I was. That was a humbling experience. And then I'm going to like Toys R Us trying to apply for a warehouse job, right? And there's this one job that is left and I didn't want to do it, but it was like either going back to the union and doing floors again or going and being a conductor in this for Metro in the city of Chicago. I didn't want to do that either. So I'm surfing around and I see this job open. Grunt Style. And I'm like, Grunt Style, what's that? And I start reading. I'm like, oh my God, a veteran company, blah, blah, blah. And designer. I'm like, I'm a designer. I got all the skills. So I get an interview. I take my portfolio and drive up there and sit down with the CEO that would become my business partner.
And at the time, they were located in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, Schaumburg, right?
Yeah.
It's right next to a methadone clinic. I'll never forget it. The production room was no bigger than the size of my office. It's ridiculous. But I get turned down for that job, for the designer position. I was like, oh my God, like I've never really been turned down for a job before. This is new. And I'm driving home, and that was the last thing. I'm like, I don't have anything else. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't want to go back into the union. I don't want to be a train conductor, blah, blah, blah. And phone rings, and it's the founder. And he's like, hey, I really enjoyed sitting down with you and talking. And there's something about you. I really want you on my team. I'm like, well, you just turned me down for the job, bro. Well, there's something. Yeah.
What,
I got something
what else. Up? You want to just rub it in or what?
Right. He's like, what is this call about? So he's like, I got another job for you. It almost seems crazy. This whole conversation, you know, as I continue to tell it over the years, it seems crazy to me. But he's like, I got a job folding T-shirts. I was like, you know what? I'll take it. I never even asked how much I'd get paid. He told me what time to show up on Monday. And from there, set off the career. 11 years later, here I am as a co-owner of the brand and one of the chief executives of the business. And I get to work with great people every day. I'm part of the chairman of the Grunstout Foundation that's making incredible impacts within the veteran community. Like, amen. I'm just truly blessed that I have been afforded this opportunity and that I get to show up every day and be a force of change for so many different people.
You mentioned the challenge going from military to civilian life. And I'm going to give a plug for the Honor Foundation. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's an absolute privilege to be able to coach with some of the, we call them fellows within the Honor Foundation. And my job is just to help support and get them prepared to go from military service to the civilian world and help them find a job. And I'm one of many coaches that work with them, but it is an absolute privilege to be able to do that because it is, as you described, a stressful experience. They've been living life one way and now it's going to change. And so the Honor Foundation, what they're doing is it's awesome stuff.
I had two separate experiences transitioning out of active duty because I was active duty from 97 to 2001. That wasn't that difficult, really. That was like, for me, and again, these are all personal experiences. Every personal experience is different. Transitioning from the active duty side, I didn't really have much of a challenge there, right? Like I had a good network. I came back to Chicago from North Carolina. I had a place to live. I found a job rather quickly. I was motivated, right? And that wasn't too difficult, right? I think some of the work behaviors and the lack of motivation and taking initiative. I had things I struggled with. The general population just exhibits all the time, right? But I didn't really have a hard transition there. It was more of like coming out of the reserve battalion after the combat that like really, I didn't understand what was going on. Like it seemed like my entire world was taken upside down and shaken. And
like, really?
Down to my core self. And that's where I think it was. The combat part of it really changed some of the wiring in my head. And I think I was looking through the world through a different perspective in that time period. And it got to be a very dark place.
Well, you're thrown into a situation that really, I can't even comprehend it. I have no idea what that would be like. And I'm sure it's traumatic. And coming back from that has certainly got to be a challenge. But you did. Yeah. You're chief brand officer at Grunstout, co-owner, doing awesome. The company is growing like crazy. What is a typical day like at Grunstout?
Every day is atypical, right? But it's a lot of fun, right? We really allow massive creativity within the business. It's an open setting. We don't like any booths. We don't work in that type of atmosphere. So if you ever have the opportunity to come and visit a Grunstout facility, we have two in Chicago. We have one in San Antonio. Take that opportunity and really come and see the magic because it's really a lot of fun. We do a lot to capture the culture and create this workspace that allows for that maximum creativity, the maximum communication capabilities, cross-functional work is encouraged due to the way that we set these buildings up and the workflows. So it's a tight little family, right? We're about 415 employees. We'll flex during the Q4 era periods for
holidays
demand, right? So we'll flex up to five and a quarter. So it's a really great business. And again, it's first of all, we don't take ourselves very seriously. We make T-shirts.
Like it just serves a very important purpose.
It does.
Very important.
And that does not fall on deaf ears, right? We like the lightheartedness approach to everything that we do, but the seriousness of our business and the way that we look at our business is with the utmost professionalism and how we manage it, and certainly how our messaging comes through to our audience, because we are asking, especially within the tough economy that we're in, like we're asking people to give their discretionary income to share in this belief of patriotism and love of country. Like, we are greatly appreciative of every dollar that is spent within our business.
And because it helps veterans.
Absolutely.
That's what sold me right away. I mean, when I can't even remember when it was years and years ago that I first became a Grunt Style customer. And the selling point for me was, the t-shirts were cool and I like them, but you're supporting veterans. And like I said early on, we don't do enough. Yeah. So whenever there's a chance to help a vet, I'm there.
Yeah, that's where we put a lot of attention into the Grunt Style Foundation. We're only 2.5 years old. This organization is making impacts that a 7-year charity of its caliber should be doing, right? So we're definitely making some great impacts. This past Veterans Day, we celebrated with an announcement that the Grunt Style Foundation will be merging with the Irreverent Warriors 501c3 that has over 90 chapters across the United States and
tens of thousands
of members. And the idea there is we are putting more effort into suicide prevention. I think that is one of the biggest challenges that we have within the veteran community, between veteran suicides and toxic exposure that leads to devastating cancers. We've got some serious issues within the community, and Grunt Style is in both of those conversations. We were involved in getting the passage of the PACT Act completed in the summer of 2022. You might have seen
you were a big part of that.
Yeah, I started to sit down because I wasn't going to take it anymore by these politicians that have never worn the uniform and don't have the courage to do so.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you went to Washington, D.C. and just sat and just until it was going to happen, you were just going to stay.
Yeah, and we put some great pressure on politicians, right? And never would have thought in my wildest days, like if 45-year-old Tim would have gone back to 22-year-old Tim and said, like, hey, brother, you know that you're going to lead one of the biggest protests on veteran healthcare in America? I'm like, no, you're out of your mind.
But it's huge. So tell our listeners, what was that all about and how do the veterans benefit from that?
It's been a long story, but I'll truncate it as best as I can. This has been a situation that's been going on for decades. They really focalized around the idea of this thing called burn pits. Burn pits were trash heaps that were maintained by U.S. military personnel on nearly every military installation of the global war on terrorism. And imagine everything that you consume, right? The United States military, it's part of its TTPs, tactics, training, and procedures, is to never turn your garbage over to the enemy or allow it to be consumed by the enemy, because they can glean intelligence from that, human intelligence. So the United States military burns all of its garbage. It burns its footprint. So imagine, if you will, one battalion that could be in the Marine Corps, anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 Marines on a small little base in a small little country in the middle of fucking nowhere. Excuse my language.
But literally in the middle.
Those 1,500 people create garbage. They create trash. They create all sorts of things, right? And you have to eliminate that so the enemy does not get their hands on it. And the best way of doing it is make a trash heap, pour a bunch of JP-8 on it. And that's rocket fuel. set it on fire, right? Now, you have to do this within a secure location, right? So most of these burn pits were happening within the four walls of a forward deployed area. You've had some bases like Mosul and others that had massive football fields worth of trash that were burning constantly, 224 hours a day, 365 days a year.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Breathing that stuff in, right? And that was creating a lot of toxins that started really manifesting in these exotic cancers. So a group by the name of Burn Pits 360, whose executive director is Rosie Torres, an incredible, incredible female, and married to a former Army veteran that was suffering from his own toxic exposures, right? And that put her on the path to achieve some change or achieve some acknowledgement that these things were happening to forward deployed individuals. So over 15 years, she was on that path. We came in towards I've been working with Rosie now for about 6-7 years. And when I heard of what she was doing, I had a dear friend of mine, Sergeant Frank Hazelwood, died in 2012 from this. Major Hamster died of this brain tumor. He was our XO, my colonel, my CEO. He died of this. He died from lung cancer. And there's about 40, 50 others within my battalion right now that are currently dealing with cancer or have died from this. And then you have...
Did you say 40 or 50?
Between 40 and 50 additional within our battalion that are suffering.
Wow.
Now, this is a real problem.
Yeah.
So having been close to it and understanding what was going on, I was like, absolutely, we'll lend our resources to doing whatever we can to be a value add to this mission. So we got involved with Rosie. She then brought John Stewart into the conversation between the three of us. We educated America on toxic exposure, or we did our best, right, to get as many people to understand what was going on and build this momentum. We were putting leaflets into orders. And, you know, at that time period, we were driving 70,000 orders a month. So we were dropping a leaflet of education into every order going out the door. We did that for, Christ, almost a year of doing that. And then we did podcasts, all these different things just to get more people recognized.
Build awareness.
Right. Mm-hmm. We had to build all that awareness. Did a 2-hour long live broadcast with John Stewart, John Feel, several doctors, researchers, all from prestigious Ivy League colleges and schools and working for the NIH. You know, we had everybody.
Well, it's great that you got the attention of some people that could, I mean, there are influencers out there.
That attention got Senator Gillibrand to start working with the team on drafting legislation. At that time period, it was called the Warfighters Pact. And from there, it really grew into this really neat thing that allowed the veteran the ability to say, hey, I don't need to fight for my health care. Like, why do I have to prove to the Department of Defense or the Veteran Affairs that I was in a location at this time period during this, 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 and this, when I could just show my ribbon and that should be accepted or whatever the case may be, right? So the PACT Act and its finality came out to 23 presumptions that were put forward that at that time were some of the had the most information that could be determined as a presumptive illness. Now, the beauty of it is that the VA is continuing to this day to add presumptions to it. So this is a living, breathing piece of legislation and law that is just continuing to get added to because...
And it needs to, right? It can't just stay stagnant.
It has to continue. Yeah. The way that we position, I'll give credit to the team that, you know, of Rosie, John, Senator Gillibrand, is that we were building for the future. We wanted to make sure we captured everybody from today backwards. But this is also for the future warfighter, that we can't continue to make these mistakes that are ultimately paid with human life that is to do with combat.
And it's crazy to me to think that any veteran has to prove where they were or to get some type of approval for additional care. I mean, it's difficult for me to wrap my head around.
And this goes into the conversation with the VA. And I want to be very careful about this conversation with the VA because it's a touchy subject, right? A lot of the community, if not all the community, has a negative aspect of the VA. I've had my own negative experiences with the VA, right? But that is not the entire VA experience. There are great VAs across the country. I think this administration under Secretary McDonough has done an incrementally amazing job at building better programs within the VA for the GWAT veteran. That's the big challenge, right? Is that the VA structure is still built for the Vietnam Persian Gulf veteran. It's not built for the GWAT. We have a very different set of needs that they're just starting to catch up to, right? So the VA is a difficult conversation, right? Like all things government, it's bureaucratic and it's slow and it doesn't get things right 98% of the time. But it is an organization that does provide veteran, this is the safety net of the veterans' healthcare.
Well, its existence is important.
It is, absolutely.
Out of all of the accomplishments that you've had, and there have been many, and you just talked about one that is huge. And I mean, that is, in the spirit of game changers, that is a game changer for sure. And thank you for all that you've done there. What are you most proud of?
Oh, I think this one's pretty easy to me, but it also has a lot of hair on it, right? What we signed up for Iraq, what we signed up for was not what we got. I think the weapons of mass destruction and all the other things there, like, it is what it is. The ending is what it is. It's not as bad as Afghanistan. It wasn't as bad as Vietnam. But the ending in Iraq was just, again, another story of nation building gone wrong by the United States. But the thing that I enjoyed the most about my time in Iraq, and the thing I'm most proud of, is I was able to see a group of people that for the very first time in their existence that they remember, these women, men, women, and children of, you know, 20, 30, 40 years old, getting the ability to vote for their own government for the first time in their life. Like, wow. My friend, that to me was the most profound experience, because we take that for granted here in the United States. Oh, it's another 4 years. We got to vote for, you know, a president every 2 years. We got to vote for these schmuck, these old dudes up the hill that, you know, have no understanding of how life on the streets of America could actually work. Right. Yeah. we take all that for granted. Right. Yeah. I'm standing in Iraq.
Well said, by the way.
Right. I'm standing in Iraq in 2004, protecting a polling station that we weren't going to be given, because it was said that our area of the northern Babel province was the most deadliest area. And this is the same time Fallujah was going on, the most deadliest area of Iraq. Right. Wow. We weren't going to get that, but we got three. And we ended up turning 78% voter turnout on a population of 3 million people. Like, that to me was incredible, to see them standing in lines when insurgents were driving by them, gunning them down, shooting mortars and rockets at them, trying to blow up these polling centers. There were, all three of them were madrasas, right? These were schoolhouses for the children that were reinforced.
And they wanted to blow them up.
They want to blow these places up, right? And these people are getting gunned down, and nobody ran. They all stood there, right? And they all wanted to get that blue fingerprint, right, that they can hold up in the air and say that I participated in a democracy.
And you said 78% participation?
In the northern, in our province.
In your province.
We turned out.
That's amazing.
It's incredible, right? I think the overall was over 70% for the country, right? So that's
unbelievable. That's incredible
in itself. But again, we take a lot of things for granted here in the United States, and that's okay. Like, it's the life that we live. We live in a first world country that gets to experience all the amazing things of life, right? And to find myself in a place where I'm participating in a government's right of democracy, that everybody will be treated reasonably equal amongst each other, like, that's crazy to me.
In this country, we have so many things to be proud of, so many things to appreciate. And I think by and large, many of us do. But I it is so bothersome and irritating to folks like me, and I believe you, when you see people that don't. They don't appreciate all that they have, and the fact that we can go to bed at night, put our head on a pillow, and feel safe.
I think this is a good conversation that we should all be having, right? Is, we in this country have this ability to protest, to make our voices be heard, and all the things that we want. And we've seen it. God, have we seen it over the last 3 years? Like, I feel like we're living in bizarro land. But at the same time, like,
I think so too.
That's what we foster here in the United States, is the ability to protest, the ability to petition our government, right? We're not always going to see eye to eye on that, right? And with some of the things that we've experienced over the last 3 years have been crazy. But at the same time, these are not new situations for the United States. We've endured so much in our short relative history as a republic that we can sustain these things, right? As long as we understand that we are allowing these voices to be heard, even though we disagree with them, because that is the fabric of what we've created with our country.
The minute we become stronger and better
from us, because we don't agree with the pro-Palestinian or the pro-Israeli thing that's happening in certain U.S. city in USA, then we will start having problems in this country, because we are not allowing the free expression of thought and idea.
Couldn't agree more. So what does the next 5 years look like for Grunt Style? I mean, you are on a huge growth trajectory, and I got to think that growth is going to continue. But where do you see the next 5 years going?
I think you got two lanes of on the path here, right? We have the LLC side, which I think is going to continue to grow as we continue to bring great product and great messaging to the audience of those that love us, right? And as we continue to find new customers, that people that don't even know that we exist, and share our love of freedom, our love of country, our love of self with all these people, right? I think there's some very exciting things that are happening with the LLC side. Got some really great business announcements that are going to be happening through 2024. The goal is to continue to build a bigger tent, bring more people to this understanding of, hey, patriotism is not a dirty word. We can have a love of country and still disagree with one another, and that's okay. Now, and then on the flip side, we have the foundation, where, you know, we're continuing to go after the things that are important within our community, understanding toxins, right? We're putting together a big program that we're going to go around the United States collecting samples from our community to understand what is in our bodies. We're going to make a very hard push to reduce the numbers of veteran suicides with our collaboration and merger with the Reverend Warriors. That is just once the first step in a bigger plan.
And just to remind our listeners, 22 a day on average.
It's even bigger than that, my friend. It's bigger than 22 a day is the reported and what's being reported. Right. You know, we can look back at like Brown University put out a study just recently saying that over the 20-year war, 30,177 veterans have taken their lives. In that same period, you've had the 20-year war, 7,057 combat-related deaths. So, you know, just doing simple math, I'm a Marine, I can do that. I did the MCI. It's at a factor greater than four that we're taking our own lives far after combat. So the war is not in a foreign land, right? We are very efficient in doing that. We are very great at reducing the enemy to zero. The war is in our minds. The war is in our souls. It's in our spirit. When we come back home, we're having to deal with a lot of different things. As I had mentioned earlier, I was suicidal. I did a documentary years ago, you know, talking about my brief interaction with the darkest moments of my life, but I made it through. I was one of the lucky ones, and we need to do a better job of reducing that. This country has done a very good job of saying thank you for its service to veterans, or their service to veterans, as we step over the homeless veteran sitting on the street that's panhandling for a couple bucks, right? So we have a lot of work to do. And you know, I think the Gwen Style Foundation, through its work in food insecurities, through its work in suicide prevention, through its work in toxic exposure, you know, we deliver hyperbaric chambers to veterans that are suffering from toxins, TBI, and other soft tissue damage. So we're very ingrained there. And that's why I see our work continuing to grow over the next 5 years is get deeper within the community, finding and providing data to the VA saying, hey, this is what is the need of the GWAP veteran. And we're bringing you the data. Let's make some changes and be a force of change, because the status quo isn't working anymore.
Well, you will be a force of, I mean, you already have been a force of change, and whatever the announcements are over the 2024 and all the growth that you're going to have in the foundation, man, who knows what's, you know, sky's the limit for Grunt Style for sure. The creativity that you have in Grunt Style and the t-shirts that you come up with are just amazing. And I can tell you, my experience is not, certainly not unique, but I can tell you two separate times. One time was at a Love's truck stop right outside of Rockford, Illinois. Oh, yeah. And the other was in a Buc-ee's right between Houston and Dallas. So if you're in Texas, Buc-ee's is, you know, big deal. But I had my Grunt Style shirt on, and those two situations, somebody came up to me and was like, hey, brother, Grunt Style. I mean, it's good stuff. I'm like, absolutely, absolutely. And so, I mean, for people who know Grunt Style and recognize the creativity and just the, you know, the logo itself, I mean, it's pretty, it's awesome stuff. How in the world do you come up with the t-shirts? I mean, it's just, you know, the creativity is off the charts.
I can't let all the secrets out, but what I will say is that we have a really great team. We have six designers, and you know, these six designers put out an incredible amount of designs. We release around 65 shirts a month, and that's an incredible amount of product, right?
Wow. So we're cranking out two new ones a day.
Yeah, and we're turning down others. We're bringing in new product lines that bring in new customers. So we have a whole process that we go through to produce a quarter's worth of work. And during that time period, the teams are collaborating. Again, like I said, we are very focused on a creative environment. So it makes it very easy for these people to get together and brainstorm and come up with some of the most best ideas for t-shirts, for our marketing, for our copy, our podcasting. For me, the greatest thing that Grunt Style provides is a creative outlet that I can come in with some of the most creative people that I know and just throw things around. And there's no crazy idea. And the craziest ideas are generally the ones that get greenlit.
Yeah. Well, and to be recognized in Buc-ee's, I mean, they sell Grunt Style now.
We are one of their biggest vendors. And I would have never imagined, like when teams like, hey, Tim, we're going to be selling at Buc-ee's. I'm like, a gas station, guys? We're a premium product. What are you talking about? And like, have you ever been to a Buc-ee's? I'm like,
yeah,
no.
but Buc-ee's is, right? You know,
and boy, did I put
unique.
And I put my foot in my mouth, right? It's one of our greatest partners and they do tremendous work and they're just great for the Grunt Style brand. And we're lucky to be a partner with them.
So a couple of fun questions now, as we kind of wrap things up, we've talked about some very serious subjects but I know you're from Chicago. I'm from Chicago as well. I like to say that I escaped Illinois because what's going on there is kind of
same,
less than optimal. So, but as you look back in your time in Chicago, I was a Cubs and a Sox fan, love the Bears. So I'm patient and tolerant. You still a Chicago sports fan?
I will say this. Living in the city, in, you know, the outskirts or the collar of the city, right? I was South Side, Orland Park, Romeoville, all that area, right?
I grew up in Lansing,
right?
Just down the street.
During that, like the 80s and the early 90s, like it was great to be a Chicago sports fan. Like the Bears were okay, right? The Blackhawks were on fire. The Cubs were like the Bears. Yeah, you knew what you're going to get. And the Sox were up and down. But it was a great vibe. Yeah. It was a great thing to be a sports fan. When the Sox won the World Series in 2005, I had the time of my life. I went to a couple of those World Series games, and you know, it was great.
They played the Astros, ironically enough.
Yes, it was amazing. And then, you know, I've been to my fair share of Cub games. My wife likes to say that I'm a Cub fan in hiding because I probably go to more Cubs than I go to Sox games. But I still follow the Sox here in San Antonio, right? So they get every now and again, they'll come through and play Houston. So we'll take the family up to watch them, and it's fun.
Cool. I, for some reason, I'll always be a Bears fan. I don't know why that is.
I can't do that 1985. Anymore.
But it's hard.
So family has ruined it for me. It's like, can they just sell the team? Like anybody will do a better job than them right now.
Yeah.
Like now they're dealing with this whole, they made the entire state of it. Like, here's the problem of it. If I can capture the problem of Illinois in a brief sentence here, it's the Chicago Bears sold the people of Illinois on this whole refurbishment of Soldiers Field. And we'll live in Chicago forever. Blah, 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 blah. Be the Chicago Bears. Right, they're they're trying to move the whole team out of the city and
you know, Arlington Heights.
Leave that over to leave Soldier Field over to the city to absorb, because there won't be any more revenue running through that thing comparable to the Bears. And now Arlington Heights is like, whoa, this tax evaluation. Let's have a conversation. It's not $22 million. It's $130 million. Like, what are we talking about? So the politics, the corruption in the state of Illinois, there's a brief little insight of just how deep it goes.
It is deep, deep, deep waters for sure when it comes to corruption in Illinois. No doubt about it. Yeah. Oh, man. This has been so much fun, Tim. Thank you for taking the time. One last question. Okay. Let's pretend, maybe not, unrealistically, but you have just been, maybe sometime in the future, but you've just been elected president of the United States. Now, that might happen. Who knows? All right. What are the first three tasks that you're going to put on your to-do list? President Tim Jensen, United States of America. What are you going to do?
I'll speak personally as Tim Jensen, that not representative of Grunt Style or anything like that.
Okay. Answer it any way you want to, but I'm looking forward to your answer.
I would say, the first thing we need to do is we need to shut down the borders. We need to really have a better control of what we are calling the four walls of the United States and how permeable are they? We need to really do a better job there. Second,
the country has borders.
Yeah. Secondly, I would, we have to get this debt under control. The debt in this country is unbelievable. We're at $35 trillion in debt, I believe it is.
And growing. Yeah.
Growing. We were at, something along the tunes of like $5 trillion 20, 25 years ago, right? The debt is out of control. The war machine is out of control. And I would reduce the $900 billion war machine budget. So those are the three things I would do. I'd shut down the borders, get our budget under control, and then reduce the military-industrial complex.
Oh, we need to get you on the ballot, Tim.
there was another guy like that. His name was Kennedy, and they killed him.
Well, we don't want that to happen to you. Man, this has been so great, and I so appreciate you taking the time. You mentioned early on coming out and seeing Grunt Style in person, and I'm looking forward to my visit in a couple weeks coming over to your place in San Antonio. Can't wait.
It's a great headquarters. A lot of rich heritage in the building itself. It's a federally historic landmark. And
Cool.
I think we've done a really great job of making the interiors as great as the outside.
Awesome. How do people learn about Gruntstyle and Tim Jensen?
Sure. Yeah, I would say go to gruntstyle.com. You can get all the information about the business there. Check out our social medias. We're on every major platform that you're scrolling through. And then, I would say check out gruntstylefoundation.org. That is our 501c3, where we focus on military and food insecurities, veteran transition sustainment, veteran suicide, and veteran homelessness. We explicitly service the active and veteran military community.
And I'll just say again, for myself, I'm a big advocate of everything that you do. I've been a customer for a long time. I support the foundation. And please, please keep up the great work that y'all are doing. We appreciate it. We need more of it. Tim Jensen, thank you for being on the Game Changers podcast. And all you listeners out here, thank you for tuning in. Always appreciate you very much. Today was a great day. Tomorrow will be even better. Peace, everyone. Find out more about the show at GameChangersWithJeff.com. And make sure you're following Game Changers on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are everywhere. Never miss an episode. We appreciate you listening. Grateful for your following.